The implied value today of a Bitcoin, today's purchasing power against today's balance sheet, is $43 million. The sats I give today on Nostr, which will buy coffees today, will buy cars in the future. You mentioned Facebook. I'd be surprised if Dell and Amazon don't start buying this year too.
Mark Zuckerberg could be a bigger Bitcoin bull than Michael Saylor. Now, do you think I'm just outlandish here?
I don't think he could possibly catch Michael Saylor at this point.
Why do you think that?
Because by doing so, the price runs so high in fiat dollars that you just... And this is likely to happen. This could happen in this cycle. If people are holding in self-custody, where does the Bitcoin come from? Just imagine you're a financial institution and you've always been able to short long and short a system and get bailed out. What about when you try to short something you can't buy back in at a price? Like, what does this do to some of the institutions that might naked short this and what that would cost? We're going to see some really interesting...
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Jeff Booth, in the house. We're here in the Crypto Cafe here in Medellin, Colombia. Maybe we'll have to change it to the Bitcoin Cafe. But Jeff, the last time we spoke, the Bitcoin power law was making waves, and we discussed a little bit about that. But it's making even more waves now about how everything is price in the old system. So are you coming around to these models just yet, Jeff?
Not at all. not at all. And everybody's welcome to whatever model they want, and they're welcome to debate those models. This is pretty simple to me, really simple to me. If you have a decentralized secure protocol bounded by energy, it is repricing the world. And you can't reprice the world through the piece of paper, because you don't know how many pieces of paper that most people are going to print to do it. So this is the construct of all of these things are from the system that's still measuring in a piece of paper. So I find I have nothing against anybody that's saying that, or like you could get a lot of views by saying the system's going to collapse tomorrow. You could get a lot of views by saying we're going to have $2 million Bitcoin tomorrow. You could get a lot of views by taking the opposite side of that and telling those people they're wrong. It actually doesn't matter. All of it doesn't matter. If Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, it will reprice everything else.
Well, there we go. I love that. Yeah. And so why do you think there's this obsession then? Is it just because everybody's so fiat-minded? When it comes to everything still being priced in dollars, everything looking at it that way, why do you think there's always this obsession? And it seems like number go up has always been kind of the biggest driver of new adoption.
We've lived in an extractive monetary system forever. There has never been a system like Bitcoin before. So all of our ideas are coming from that system. And so it would be normal from that system to measure number go up, but just and think through this at a first principles level. If you are saying number go up, you are actually part of the centralizing system, because that system the natural state of the free market is deflation. We've always a credit based system cannot allow deflation. Fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair. So both those statements are true. So the credit-based system is based on a piece of paper that everybody's measuring the world and thinking the piece of paper is solvent, right? And that money is lent into existence. So even if you just paid back all the debt, there'd be no money left, right?
Yeah.
So it makes your head kind of scratch, right? So that system requires inflation. Requiring inflation is requiring theft in money. Requiring inflation is a centralizing function. So if you're pricing from the system that is requiring inflation, and this natural state of the free market is deflation, then you're part of the centralization of Bitcoin. And I'm not expecting everybody to know this today, tomorrow, anything else, but in time. That's why I just keep saying, if Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, it actually doesn't matter if you want to price in the piece of paper or not. It doesn't, and a lot of people will trade their Bitcoin for the piece of paper so they can buy it, and they'll get rich in that process, and they'll think they're getting rich, and they'll trade to the piece of paper. But over time, as that centralizes more and more and more, a lot of people won't run nodes. A lot of those people will trust the centralized entities with their Bitcoin because they got rich in it, and it'll centralize further. And if that continues to happen, because these two systems are opposites, mm-hmm. they cannot coexist, right, without centralization. Yeah. So if they can't coexist without centralization, and you're part of the system centralizing, then at some point those people will probably trust other actors to hold their Bitcoin, centralized, and they'll get wiped out by the system that is decentralized and secure, bounded by energy. That is a likely outcome down the road sometime from a mindset of people pricing in a fiat instrument, just like they did to gold. Exactly the same thing. Because what would happen? Gold would centralize, and then you would attack gold.
Yeah, so I guess it's interesting because I still think like a lot of fiat-minded people still think that the decentralization of Bitcoin would not allow it for it to fully scale or get to a point where it could be a true free and open market. Is that just because, you know, the resistance to that is maybe because we've never seen a true and free and open market? Like, why do you think that they're so...
This would be so hard to see, and it's on multiple levels. And it'd be so hard to see on multiple levels because so now let's just start the decentralization security. So you could argue that these different worlds, right? So it could never scale without fiat, right? That's your argument. And fiat needs to be an inflationary system, and it will cheat, right? Humans cheat. Right. And if you can control a system that steals from other people a little bit, you will. So that system will continue on that, and it'll break again. In other words, even if you resolve the current balance sheet issue, mm-hmm. because Bitcoin went up so much in that, and it looked like your balance sheet was better in that state, it will break again because the natural state of the free market is deflation. And we should have exponential deflation because productivity is moving exponentially. So that system will break again, even if Bitcoin measured in that system goes to $2 or $3 million or whatever, and then it trades sideways for a long time, and then it breaks again. That system will break again because it's not the natural state of the world, and we've always trusted that. It's actually why we've always gone to war to reset the currency, to blame those other people. And after the war, we set up institutions shall never forget, and we memorialize all those people, and then we start the process over again. And that is actually the process, that centralizing process that leads it into more centralization and more breaking and more manipulation of markets and misallocation of capital is the same reason we then divide society and then go to war to reset it. That's it's always been out of money.
And then you need an inflationary process in order to do that is sort of the gist of it, correct?
So you need to debase all your currencies. You need to, because the natural state, productivity should be flowing to you. So why this is so hard to see is we hold on to one part of, so when there's been a big change, often we can't see the second and third order derivatives of the big change. We hold on to our mental view. Even if we understand the change at one level, we hold on to the other view we had. And here's an example. What would happen? So then if the natural state of the market, free market, is deflation, and we know it's deflation and productivity is more deflationary, what we do while we're doing this is, but what if we lose our job? How are we going to survive? Because we think about the prices being this price and going up, even if we get this, which they won't be these prices. Prices will fall everything, everywhere. And so as you lose your job, or if you lose your job, you don't need the same job to be able to survive, because prices kept falling. That would be the natural state. And there will be, constant attacks on what I just said. Mm-hmm. And the only thing you need to know is does Bitcoin stay decentralized and secure? It's the only thing. So, because if it didn't, if the attack came, let's say the attack came from the US dollar and a whole bunch of people creating a US dollar instrument on this, and the attack came, and then they wanted to change Bitcoin on the attack, what that would mean is Bitcoin failed in decentralization and security. Okay. It was centralized. So the only thing you actually have to care about is, does it stay decentralized and secure? And as you learn more and more why this is important, and you run Node yourself, and you look for attack vectors everywhere, you start to realize that it's not reason. It will be tried. It will likely be tried, not because of bad people, because of incentives in a system that we are the system. We literally are the system, but you can imagine most of the people that would be trusting a US dollar derivative, if that's what they were doing, mm-hmm. wouldn't be running notes.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the first time we spoke, I think it might be over 2 years ago now, you hit on this topic with me about Bitcoin being deflationary. And I still don't know if I've actually fully grasped that, to be honest with you. So, like, what do you mean by, and what does a deflationary world mean? Like, what does that kind of look like? Would it mean, like, obviously, like, this table over time maybe gets cheaper, but how would that affect, I guess, like, what would the third order effects potentially be in a deflationary world?
Yeah, and so, and let's just clarify, Bitcoin itself isn't deflationary. Now, it could be if people lost coins, it could be deflationary. But Bitcoin is a neutral currency.
Okay.
Which allows the free market to work, and the free market is deflationary.
Okay.
Right. And why is the free market deflationary? Because we compete with others to provide more value than what was there before. And if you do not provide more value, you fail, because no one uses your thing, mm-hmm. right? Or product or service. So in other words, you come out and you create a podcast, mm-hmm. right? And if your podcast doesn't provide more value, nobody watches it, mm-hmm. right? So you're competing with everyone else creating podcasts to create more value for people. If that if you don't, you fail. And the output of that, and how the podcast's done today, now we're in person right now, and we're in person because we're in Medellin together, mm-hmm. but you can do a podcast now anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And where you used to always have to travel, and the production cost and the cost, it was an extraordinary cost to find people. Mm-hmm. Now you can do it with a fraction of the cost, and that fraction of the cost is going to come down a lot more with artificial intelligence and the like. So you're competing with new tools that are invented by our minds, right, and other people trying to create value in the free market that are constantly competing. And the output of us using the thing that gives us more value is prices fall.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So how could what I just described, where do you get anywhere how prices could rise in that system?
I don't think you can, right?
Okay. So if you can't, right, then you realize the only reason prices fall or rise, the only reason is you don't live in a free market. You live in a control system. You live in a system where that productivity, it shouldn't, prices shouldn't be measured, inflation shouldn't be measured from zero. It should be measured from the productivity rate of the world, which would probably be -5 today, and then maybe -7 next year, maybe -15 the next year, right? As more and more people tried to compete to provide value to you, and you use the things that give more value, and the output of that is prices fall for everybody. That's the world you should live in. So why it's so hard for people to understand this. And I thought people understood this when I wrote my book. And I thought you understood it the last time we talked. and I thought, and Natalie and I had this conversation that just came out as a podcast, but it wasn't meant to be a podcast. It was her trying to get way deeper on this topic. And what I recognize is how hard this topic is for everyone. I mean, it's hard because we measure a system from the system, and all of our history books are written out of that system. So it's really like, where do you look to describe a new world, what that new world would look like, and all the second and third order consequences of the new world, the incentives changing? Where do you look? Right. And there's not a lot of places. There's my work. Safe's done some work, but there's not a lot of work on what that looks like. And how the world heals, because it's the exact opposite of the system that we it's a mirror image, the system we live in.
Quick break from this podcast episode to bring you the safest way to buy Bitcoin on the planet. You got to go to the well, folks. That's right, the Bitcoin well. They will help you buy Bitcoin and send it directly to your personal wallet. You can sell Bitcoin directly from your personal Bitcoin wallet. And on top of that, if you want to buy large amounts of Bitcoin, they've got some of the most competitive rates in the space where they've got great white glove service. I'll even help introduce you to my friends over at the Bitcoin Well to make sure that they're taking care of you when you want to go through the over-the-counter service. And on top of that, they help support you and the freedom technology that Bitcoin offers. So I wouldn't partner with a company that I don't use myself. So I use Bitcoin Well to make all of my Bitcoin purchases. So I highly recommend them. So why don't you go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and you can sign up today and join the party at the well. Maybe even get some tokens where you could throw into the wishing well and potentially win some free sats as well. Enough from me. Let's get back to the show. Yeah, and I think, you know, everybody in business, the like verbiage you used about providing more value, right? You go to all of these, you listen to all these business podcasts, that's what everybody says, right? Provide more value, you'll get more in return. And now that almost has me thinking like, okay, well, if I'm providing more value, but in, you know, maybe my income 10X is in a year or something along those lines, am I really providing 10X more value? Or is that kind of, I guess, it's tough to like, you're measuring your own value then and how much money you're able to bring in, but then it's an inflationary currency. So then you don't really, because of like how much money is being printed, you don't know necessarily how much extra value you're providing, if that makes sense. Right.
So a couple things going from there. And I think, so there can't be a monopoly for long in a free market. It's impossible because the monopoly increases the price increase, the margin increase from the monopoly has everyone attacking that monopoly with a whole bunch of new creative ideas to be able to why? Because there's so much margin to gain there, right?
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs don't create the next calculator app anymore. They try to create where there's more value. And so it's just a natural place. So the monopolies exist today, and why the monopolies look like they do, and they're getting richer and richer and richer relative to you and extracting more and more, more and more because they live on top of an extractive system. And it would, of course, look like that. And essentially, they are the opposite side of the productivity that's supposed to flow to you getting extracted from you. That's what the monopolies look like today. And how do you compete against those monopolies inside that system? How could you create the next Google? You can't. Because they're so all powerful, and all of the people using the service is making them more powerful, making more AI inside a system that's extracting everything from those people. That's all social media and the centralized platform looks, and everybody contributing to it is actually getting worse inside that system. Well, they're all trying to get more money in it, right? And they're driving it, getting it worse, and so you can feel around the world what I'm saying. How do you create, it wouldn't be a monopoly, but if you measured in Bitcoin the gain that what you're making instead of in fiat, what you're making is going to go up in purchasing power forever. So the sats I give today every day on Noster, which will buy coffees today, will buy cars in the future. Right? That's what it will look like.
Yeah.
And so if you're contributing your time today and you're patient in that time and you're tuned out of this other world, you're going to be extraordinarily benefited from creating value for other people in an area that accrues more value to you because you created more value.
Now with business, I think that I've been kind of saying this is, it's not always the best product that wins. It's usually the best marketed and the best sold product. Now in this kind of world, in a Bitcoinized world, would that not necessarily be the best, or would that not necessarily be correct, where the best product will end up winning? It's just maybe in the short term, the one that's marketed better or, you know, sold a little bit better might win, but the product that is in the end, you know, better fits whatever use case it is, will eventually win in just over time, and it just kind of takes a slower burn? Or how do you see business, I guess, revolutionizing in that sense?
It completely changes the paradigm. It doesn't change the paradigm as from if you don't provide value, you fail, right? Or if you provide something way out here that is one day going to work, but it takes too long for you to get there, you'll fail. But here's what happens when you win. As you win, everybody else is going to compete with you because there's margin there. Mm-hmm. And by that competition, if you don't reduce the cost, if you don't keep going, you will fail to somebody else competing against you. You cannot sit idly by and rent seek. Because it's the opposite type of world. It's a productive capacity of the world. And the entire globe, 8 billion people, are free to compete in the system. So they will all compete with you. And that will continue and continue and continue. And that's what drives in the free market. Prices fall to the marginal cost of production. And so I constantly ask this, what's the margin? And this is why this is so important. So the marginal cost of production of a line of code is exactly zero. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's why a lot of your apps today are free on your phone. What's the marginal cost of production? And because the apps used to cost money, and then other people would compete, and they would go to free. And then the entrepreneurs would go somewhere else where they could make money, right? So the first entrepreneurs that did created value, got paid, and then it kept falling. And then they move somewhere else. That's how it's supposed to work. They don't just create value once and sit and rent seek forever. Constant competition. And that competition drives prices to the marginal cost of production. In this case, zero. So if the line of code on your apps costs zero, and that's why your apps fall to zero, what is a line of code created by other lines of code cost?
Less than zero at this point.
Zero. Yeah. That's AI.
Yeah.
Right? So that's AI, which literally costs zero and will cost zero. And you can see a lot of these AI models start out at this cost and then become free. And then China just released something that is 10x better, 10 times cheaper than and competing with ChatGPT.
Yeah.
10 times. We're talking this in times of like in months, not years. 10 and that'll happen again, and it'll be 10 times again. It'll be 10 times again, and this is going to continue to happen, and all these things move to free, and then those will be integrated with robots, and those robots at first, the first iteration of robots, will cost a fair bit of money, and then entrepreneurs will race in. To create other robots, other different things tied to the same artificial general intelligence that will contribute, and drive everything to its marginal cost of production. And if you measure that in Bitcoin energy, if you measure Bitcoin and energy in Bitcoin, you can already see energy prices falling. Mm-hmm. If you measure any raw materials in Bitcoin, you can see raw materials falling. So the inputs to the things that we're talking about are also falling. So Bitcoin, it's not maybe. Bitcoin is the first truly global free market we've ever experienced. And it's just going to expand. And free markets are more productive, far more productive than controlled markets.
Yeah, and you've mentioned this phrase a couple of times, and I want to dive into it. Marginal cost of production.
Yep.
So usually, like, you know, whether it's, I don't know, like advertisements or it's manual labor, like these are all kinds of things that have some sort of subjectivity to it, right? Whatever somebody values you at, whatever an employer values your salary at. Now, how is that going to be set in like a Bitcoinized world? Is it still going to be somewhat similar where maybe, you know, dependent on your perceived value or, you know, that's how you're going to get paid? Or is it going to be more of like a results-based system? Like, how do you kind of see that?
Yeah, I can't tell you all of that. I can tell you because it's going to be chaotic as it moves through because most people don't understand that this is happening.
Yeah.
Right? It not might be happening. This is happening right now. And so people ask, when does this happen? Well, it's happening, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Right?
So if you're in Bitcoin for any four-year cycle, you know that all prices fall, right? Mm-hmm. Your representation of what you think is happening might be, because you're still living in Bitcoin in the other system, you might think it's rising faster than your other prices, right?
Yeah.
And if you didn't have Bitcoin, you're getting destroyed by the same system. You're losing money. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's say so that means there's a whole bunch of people with varying different degrees of understanding, and all are correct to their view. Mm-hmm. Right. But Bitcoin doesn't care about any of the views, right? It's just a decentralized secure protocol bounded by energy, and it's imposing new rules that you don't have to play by the rules if you don't want. You can try to stop it. You can choose not to play, but it's imposing new rules. So let's use your example and say the natural state of a free market is deflation, right? We know that because we only use the things that give us more value. And let's use two different companies today. One company says, don't worry, I'm going to keep your jobs. I'm going to keep paying you X. And for the purposes of this, let's do it in Bitcoin terms, because so it's not as complicated. So I'm gonna pay you one Bitcoin a year. And what that means is their competitor, which is negotiating the salaries to make sure that they're in line to value, will have an increasing negotiating down salaries, mm-hmm. right? We'll have an increasing performance gap against that company, and that company will fail because you won't use the company that costs more. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, this thought experiment always gets me in a bind here with you, because like the example I've always been thinking about is, if you ask the average, I guess, tech guy out there about the iPhone, whether they think it's the best smartphone there is, majority of people will say no. And, you know, but they have the network effects, whether it's the apps or, you know, you're in the group message with people and, you know, you send them the green message and they all get upset and whatnot. And it's kind of created this thing where Apple is probably the most dominant phone company, at least in the United States, not globally. And I think part of the reason was just because of like the marketing tactics that Steve Jobs really did, right? The whole white screen, the white, the clean, the chic, that aspect of it. Now, I'm just like in this new Bitcoinized world, I'm just not sure like how marketing will be, I guess, like revolutionized and sales, that aspect, because it seems like that's majority of the stress right now. It's like less on the product, more on how it's marketed and sold.
So that is 100%, because everybody's trying to stand out inside a control system that's controlled by the big monopolies. That's why like, to try to stand out on Facebook or try to market your product inside that system is the amount of extraction to try to, my thing is better. Mm-hmm. If you don't have 10 to 20 times better, good luck. Right, good luck. Mm-hmm. And to try to have 10 to 20 times better inside this perverse system, it's very, very hard. They're all me too's.
Yeah.
Right? They're narrow gaps, and you will never overcome that. This is the new system is totally different. So you have a marketing lens out of the existing system.
Yeah.
That is it's extractive. It's trying to take all of your advertising dollars to the monopolies.
Gotcha. Right?
That's what it is. And great products don't actually need much marketing. Right. Because they have 10 times better, and customers find them, and the customers are the marketing. So it's interesting to watch this. That Google doesn't really have a lot of advertising. Mm-hmm. Amazon doesn't have a lot of advertising. Facebook doesn't have a lot of advertising, but they all become giant advertisers as everybody else tries to advertise on them mm-hmm. to be able to do this. And that sucking sound to try to stand out is really hard to stand out. Out of that system. Think about, and here's the thing, every problem creates an opportunity, right? And that's how the free market works. So actually you could even say that the start of Bitcoin was that problem that cryptographers saw, cypherpunks saw, that said, this consolidating system will end up in this really bad spot. And we have to design that's different, right? That's actually what the kind of the insight to this. But now what's happening on top of that on Noster and others, if you think about all of the people here right now in the other system, as this one gets worse, this one gets better. And so if you're contributing there, even though, and as that one's getting better and better, what are the people there seeing? They're seeing their own value to other people go up mm-hmm. in response, and more people are moving their time, and they're just early in this the system. So that's kind of what's happening. This is transition.
Gotcha. I gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Now, we recently had the FASB pass, where the accounting on businesses holding Bitcoin has now changed a little bit. Obviously, Michael Saylor's been essentially the poster child of putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet with MicroStrategy. Now, with businesses starting to implement some sort of Bitcoin HODL strategy on their balance sheet, do you think this is the start of, I guess, starting to revolutionize whether or not a business is providing more value and, you know, I guess just increasing the productivity? Or do you think it's almost like, because we're still pricing in this fiat system, it's like essentially putting lipstick on a pig right now by maybe if you don't have the good underlying business and you just hold Bitcoin, that, you know, it just kind of prolongs the inevitable?
Both. Okay. Yeah, both. Like the holding Bitcoin is going to give businesses a chance to completely reinvent their business and do something else, because they're going to do so well from that. So, and in time, this is going to in eventually, the only way you're going to be able to get more Bitcoin is to trade with somebody who wants who is delivering value to you,
right? Okay.
And so that's a long time out. So in the meantime, this is just, it's part of a chaotic transition from one system to another, with each individual person kind of going through their understanding of what it means to them, and there's going to be a lot of people on the wrong side of the tracks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. Now, I have a hot take for you here, because obviously Michael Saylor's been very influential, but the only tech company with more control, where the CEO or the founder has more control, is Mark Zuckerberg with Meta. Now, I have this hot take that if, you know, Facebook and Meta potentially adopts a Bitcoin strategy and does the MicroStrategy flywheel, that Michael, that Mark Zuckerberg could be a bigger Bitcoin bull than Michael Saylor. Now, do you think I'm just outlandish here?
I don't think he could possibly catch Michael Saylor at this point.
Why do you think that?
Because by doing so, the price runs so high in fiat dollars that you just... And this is likely to happen. This could happen in this cycle. It's actually a high probability of happening in this cycle because with regulation clarity in the U.S., if U.S. Moves forward with a Bitcoin reserve, other countries will too. Whether they do or not, other countries will. Mm-hmm. And it's going to kick off a cycle where some people are selling right now and everybody's going to be buying. If people are holding in self-custody, where does the Bitcoin come from? And there's a whole bunch of Bitcoiners that aren't going to sell at any price. Mm-hmm. And so where does the, if you're trying to, just imagine you're a financial institution and you've always been able to short long and short a system and get bailed out. What about when you try to short something, you can't buy it back in at a price? Like, what does this do to some of the institutions that might naked short this and what that would cost? We're going to see some really interesting fireworks because each of these institutions, and like you mentioned Facebook, I'd be surprised if Dell and Amazon don't start buying this year too. And that's just kind of a couple of names that. And what does that cause as others do, and you start to see this acceleration? What does it cause to other people racing in? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the FOMO this year alone is going to be absolutely insane, especially with like the nation states. But you mentioned it, right? Like Amazon is voting, I believe it's in April, for their shareholders. I mean, obviously we saw Microsoft heavily say no. But I think, you know, with Meta and Amazon, that's two in the Magnificent Seven right there. If one of them or maybe another one now has a vote like later on this year and we see Bitcoin price double this year, I would be very surprised if that doesn't start a wave of FOMO that we've never seen before with corporations and then nation states now getting in. And what does that mean then for all of the Bitcoin holders here? Do you think that that's just going to... You know, is the age of being able to become a full coiner for the average person just essentially done at this point? Or, you know, like is everybody catching up? Like where is it? Is it the gradually then suddenly?
We are so early and it's not gradually. So each cycle is gradually then suddenly, mm-hmm. right? Every single cycle is this. And so you could have a blow off top to what you're talking about and then a correction, afterwards, that looks similar, but just at way higher numbers to what we're talking about now. And what drives that? Fear and greed. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's always driven markets. And so you're having this human emotion trying to get to play short long the old game. Mm-hmm. On a new protocol that's bounded by energy. It's going to set up for some really interesting fireworks. That's why I don't talk about price. That's why how could you talk about price with all of these things? Because I don't begrudge people who do, right? If that's what they want to do. And a lot of those people, and maybe that's right, because a lot of the people that are holding Bitcoin will sell at some sort of price. To trade for the back to the piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Now, a hot button topic is like how much Bitcoin you need to retire as well. Now, when you're pricing it in this new system, I feel like you have a very interesting opinion on that. Do you have like some sort of, you know, SAT number, or is it, you know, you need to be a whole coin? Where do you think like the average person, if you can just HODL for, you know, a certain period of time, how much you need in order to, I guess, like be fine in this new world that's rapidly developing?
The implied value today of a Bitcoin, today's purchasing power against today's balance sheet, is $43 million per I'm not talking $43 million. I'm talking implied purchasing power of $43 million. And two things are going to, as you move forward, two things are going to happen. The existing balance sheet, which is just based on more pieces of paper, has to expand, and it has to expand a lot, right? So as that expands, then that implied purchasing power, then all prices will be higher inside that system. House prices will be higher, oil prices will be higher relative to the piece of paper, and that will expand that 43 million. That's why it's hard to quantify. And that 43, so, but if you said purchasing power today, mm-hmm. but the purchasing power of that today will rise forever because prices will fall forever against it. That's, so you're dealing with both things at the same time, mm-hmm. and people are measuring the price through this other instrument that is extractive to what I just decided. So in time, over and over and over, if Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, eventually you won't need any Bitcoin. You will need such a tiny fraction, because as AI and robotics do the work, you won't have to. The entire world, 8 billion people in service of 8 billion people, and it keeps on getting easier and easier. Will we always have problems? Will we always have things to be able to solve? Of course, that's what the free... We'll find new things to be able to solve. And those new things will create the same thing as more and more minds solve problems for us that drive prices down faster relative to Bitcoin. So you will need in time very, very little Bitcoin to be able to do this. If I'm wrong and it gets centralized and it breaks... and it gets centralized, then what it will look like to you is you live in a control system where Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and the works, or the technocrats, control every decision of what you get. Those are the two ends of the spectrum.
Now,
because the robots and AI will still be here.
Yeah.
Right. So if you have a system that doesn't require the jobs, and that system, so the system doesn't require the jobs, and you only choose things that are more value to you, you will choose all the things that take away all the jobs and aggregate control into very few people.
Interesting.
And you will be living in that world. So it's a very, very dystopian look. And that's why this is so critical, that your mind gets around what I'm saying and you run a node. You protect this network. You join your time, because we are Bitcoin, right? If you actually know this, you opt out of this other system and you start contributing to the system that heals us.
Okay, so you mentioned it a little bit, right? Where you're talking about if Bitcoin stays decentralized, what possible way do you see it as potentially getting centralized? Is it a hard fork? Is it something that we get where, you know, BlackRock is trying to make such an effort to centralize it? Like, how do you see us potentially getting to that place?
So I want to start in a different spot, and I want to start there just because if in 5,000 years of human history, many people knew what I'm saying before, right? But we've always lived in an exploitive system. And gold couldn't resolve this conflict. And even though gold put a brakes on it, but we would trade in the derivative instrument, right? Or we would go to war with somebody else and steal their gold, right? Our mental model of this is we have to live in the... Most people believe they have to have inflation to live. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so ludicrous, right? They don't... In other words, I don't believe I could trade with people all over the world unless somebody steals my money. It's so ludicrous, but most people still believe that. So what if they believe that, they will make that true, and they will price in that system. And so the risk to Bitcoin is us, our actions. And if we've never had a system like this, then that has to be a real risk, because our actions allow the centralization, and they always have.
I'm taking a quick break from this podcast to tell you guys about Unbank. Unbank is a Bitcoin exchange with a network of ATMs all over the United States in trusted places like Costco. So you could buy and sell Bitcoin while you're getting a double chunk chocolate cookie. So on top of that, there's zero fees when you sell. That's right. I didn't stutter, folks. Zero fees. So you can visit over 28,000 locations all scattered across the U.S. They've been a trusted partner since 2014. And to start off this year hot, I've partnered with them to bring you a chance to win $200. That's right. Two cold smackers, two Ben Franks, two pieces of cheddar. All you have to do is download the app at unbank.com/greencandle, and you'll be entered in a chance to win in the raffle that'll take place on February 28th. So enter now, enter quickly, enter often, and I'll see you guys all on February 28th for the chance for you to win $200. All right, enough for me, back to the show.
And so that becomes the risk. And so today, forget BlackRock, forget all of the people who, of course, they have to try to centralize. Of course, the US has to centralize and try to create imperialism 2.0, right? But it doesn't mean they're bad. It means that they're trying to protect a way of life or system that they've always, and they can't see this other system. But it doesn't actually matter what they want to do or they, because it's not they, it's we, mm-hmm. right? There is, I've said this many times, there is no they, it's we. Mm-hmm. Our actions in this matter, our actions, we don't have to anymore. So I think the biggest thing here is the knowledge of what I'm saying, the knowledge of this. And there's not, and what makes me really excited about this too is, is when the first cryptographers list in 92 was 70 people, mm-hmm. they are now joined by 100,000 people. 100,000 people running nodes, they're joined. And actually, a lot of those people aren't even public figures, so you can't find them, mm-hmm. right? They're all over the place. And that legion of people is growing and growing and growing, who now know this. Matt O'Dell is one, right? Mm-hmm. Gigi's one, Jack Dorsey's one, you're one, mm-hmm. I'm one. And all of these people I'm sorry if I didn't name you there, because I could name so many friends, yeah. who I know are these nodes protecting this network, that understand this and why decentralization is so and security is so important for the human race and where we're going. They're truly building they're the base block of a different system, and they're going to be joined because. When the cypherpunks knew this, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Like 10 years ago, when people talked to me about Bitcoin, I was tuned out. I didn't know. I was too busy, stuck in fiat world. I didn't know all these things. And as I went down the rabbit hole and understood deeper and deeper and deeper, now I can't go back. There's no possible way. You can't go back.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can see that the value we provide society is increasing as more and more people, more and more of those future nodes are going to join us. And it doesn't have to be 8 billion people. It just has to be enough to stop the centralization.
Then how much is enough?
So what would you do if you knew everything I just said, mm-hmm. and you were, by the way, I don't think most people, the majority of people aren't evil. They're mm-hmm. they're trying to do what they think is right. And from a different playbook and everything else. So inside that, but there are some that absolutely want control, mm-hmm. but there's way more really great people in the world. That all you have to do is, and those people also work at BlackRock. Some of those people work at BlackRock. Some of those people work in some of the biggest corporations that they're trapped thinking that they can do that job. They don't even know about this yet. And as they learn too, just like I learned, just like you learned, just like they're going to add their voice to the network that protects us all. I'm absolutely convinced. And so what will happen down the road is if the centralized entity tries to chain fork this, they'll be left with zero. It will wipe out the entire system, and that it will hurt a whole bunch of people that are trusting in those centralized actors with their Bitcoin. But it would be 2017 on steroids.
As in a giant crash, or a run up?
A chain split.
Chain split. Okay, so yeah, the fork war would be
that
we couldn't even come back.
But it probably has to happen at some point. If I were trying to consolidate this, let's just say I was the exact opposite of what I talk right now, and I knew everything here, and I was trying to consolidate it, I sure would wait a long time until people weren't thinking about running nodes, didn't understand this. I would hope that people just trusted the derivative instrument, and then I would do it.
So I guess, is this the start of it? Was the ETFs the start of this potential giant hard fork that you see?
Let's just not forget ETFs, because on one side ETFs, and one side MicroStrategy, and one side, all of these are also good for Bitcoin.
Yeah,
they're really good for Bitcoin, and that's why I don't begrudge anyone for doing what they want to in Bitcoin, but there is a kind of a law in Bitcoin that thou shall not cheat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And each person who tries to cheat Bitcoin eventually gets, even in the first little while, they look like they're going to win, mm-hmm. but they all get flushed. And so I think over time, and there's a law in money.
Mm-hmm.
Thou shall not cheat. And so this system is based on truth, right? And that's how, what the nodes are doing. They're constantly ensuring that it runs by this, and they're looking for these attacks all the time. So, but there's historically in the humor, thou shall cheat,
mm-hmm.
right? And if I can win at somebody else's expense, so it's not them, it's us. And so you're going to see why I think that whole slay your heroes thing in Bitcoin is that sometimes it goes too far.
Yeah.
Because we're going to see who tries to cheat. And some people who you really like right now will surprise you in time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of people are utilizing the debt instruments, or like trying to shorten the current system in order to get more of the future system, is kind of the way I look at it.
But that's not a bad thing. That's the free market.
Yeah.
That's actually, why is that a bad thing?
I don't think
it's not. That's why I'm not against Saylor at all in that. Yeah. From that, I think he's incredibly brilliant in what he's doing. It's only a bad thing is that if then, and this hasn't happened,
yeah.
if then you exert your control to try to change it.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing at all right now. Really good. So there's nothing wrong with that. He's in the free market, creating a leverage play to be able to get more Bitcoin. And he's good for Bitcoin. It only becomes a bad thing if he then conflates it to crypto, or if he changes this to then change to say, I'm going to try to stop this. But no, it's not a bad thing at all. It's a free market acting in each person's interest, and people are investing in him in a belief that he can acquire Bitcoin better than others can. So that's the way it'll work.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he does have like access to more of those financial instruments now in the current system, just because of, you know, his standing with MicroStrategy and, you know, what he's been able to build over these past years. So I just think it's kind of an interesting thought experiment. But, you know, you brought up 2017 time. I want to talk a little bit about like the 2020 time with that past cycle, because we did see a lot of bad actors not necessarily try to centralize but sell a lot of paper Bitcoin. Now, I think that there's newer people getting in, right? They're not necessarily going to run their own node. They're going to try to trust a lot of these custodians, at least initially. Now, Do you think that these ETFs, although initially might be good for Bitcoin, like eventually could be potentially detrimental, at least in the short term, because people would be looking at these ETFs and, you know, whether they try to control it or whatnot, but then they eventually be selling paper Bitcoin? Or do you think that there's not a way that that could potentially happen because they're allegedly more regulated than?
Yeah. So I talk to a lot of people outside of the Bitcoin space.
Yeah.
And what I'd say is we are so, so, so crazy early on this understanding. And so part of the learning and understanding is people doing this. And there were a lot of people that were burned in exchanges, mm-hmm. right? There will be a lot of people burned in a whole bunch of what we call today. And then there's going to be something else. There'll probably be a whole leverage play. And lend out your Bitcoin and create leverage. And remember, if you're living in a world that's deflationary, then the debt is, you have to pay, it's harder and harder to pay back. So there's going to be a whole bunch of people like wiped out over and over and over again as they come to an understanding of what this asset class is, or what this protocol means. But the process to get there is going to be messy, and it's going to be messy because it's literally a shift in a perspective, each person's mind of trying to understand this. So I don't think ETFs are bad. I don't think Sailor's are bad. I don't think any of these things, they're just way more, you hear Bitcoin in the news all the time now. Mm-hmm. So way more people are starting to have this conversation. Way more people are starting to understand this. And I almost think about it as I visualize this giant funnel with 8 billion people in it, right? And eventually 8 billion people are going to be here. And as they're going through this, this funnel, their knowledge of Bitcoin is how they experience it. So if they, like I said before, if you think this is a scam, or if you think it's bad for the environment, it isn't, but for you it is. And so you'll stay away from it. You'll continue to give the existing system more energy. And then more and more people are moving their time into this new system that's healing the world, and they're just leading the way for a whole bunch of other people to join them.
Now, in this new system, I know we were kind of talking about this a little bit at the beginning, but I want to get back to it because we're talking a lot about the debt-based instruments now, the current system. Now, will there be like debt credit-based systems in this Bitcoinized world, or?
Far less. But let's explore why, right? Yeah. So why you think you need debt to run an economy is because you need debt to run an economy from a debt-based system, and that whole credit-based system requires more and more instruments because it requires inflation. Let's use a house as an example, mm-hmm. right? So you're storing your money in a house largely because you can't store your money in money, right? Yeah. So and if you have 10 houses versus one house, your purchasing power is more protected than if you had one house. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. And why? It's because your money is actually losing value and the house isn't losing value as fast. You still have taxes, you still have depreciation and the works. But so the house has created a monetary premium. The house shouldn't be worth anywhere close to what it's worth. Not even close. And people from the system say, but land is scarce. So they want to believe that's true. They don't want to believe that money's broken, that the house is going up the exact same rate as the money is going down. Mm-hmm. They don't want to look there. So they fall into a trap of, oh, it's because the land's scarce. And they think that that's why the house is going up. It's going up primarily because the money is going down. And the house has achieved a monetary premium. So relative to Bitcoin, you know for sure your house is falling, right? Every 4 years, your house falls in price. Mm-hmm. So it's taking the monetary premium from your house, and it's falling to its utility value in Bitcoin. And from its utility value in Bitcoin, now you can add the productivity gains that you're going to see in housing, in labor and robots, in all the materials that go into housing, all have the same curves, right? So you'll see those houses, all those materials fall in price relative to Bitcoin over and over and over again. And the house will get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to buy outright in cash. So now let's use the leverage in the system, the debt. There will likely still be some debt. Mm-hmm. But that debt will be a small amount that you feel like you can afford, and it will be expensive debt because it will get more expensive as more productivity flows into the market, because price is falling relative to it means you have to, it's going to cost you more.
Yeah.
So, and if you get that mismatch, if you're the holder of the debt and you have the mismatch, or you're the buyer at the debt, somebody's going to get liquidated. And that's going to happen over and over again. And as that happens, as it cycles through over and over again, you're going to reprice all that debt. It's all going to go away, measured in, not all going to go away. Mm-hmm. It's mostly going to go away, measured in the new system.
One of the most crooked industries, most fiat industries there is the health insurance industry. Let's be honest, you don't even need health insurance. If you could find somebody that would help you find awesome doctors, negotiate your bills, and fund those bills through a peer-to-peer funding platform, would you take it? That sounds pretty appealing to me, and that's why I've joined forces with CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a place that you could do that all in one. One giant place, you can have a group of peers where they will help you find the best healthcare that you need. On top of all that, I can help get you a discount to get you on your feet and get everything started. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE for 3 months at $99. And with all of this, you will get the healthcare you need. You don't have to worry about going through to the doctor, negotiating, everything like that. Did you hit your deductible? Did you not? Is this insurance company going to cover this claim? Is it not? You don't have to worry about any of that stress. And you could just get CrowdHealth behind you, where they can help you get the number one place to have a health insurance alternative. So join the revolution. Go to joincrowdhealth.com. Tell them that Green Candle sent you. And join me and the rest of the great CrowdHealth users in this peer-to-peer funding platform. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Like, I can't imagine right now lending somebody money for 10% return. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because Bitcoin has a 45% IRR. Mm-hmm. So why would you not just buy Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, and with these houses too, like even a couple years ago, the mortgage rates were under 3. So, I mean, like, it's just, it seems like it's just a system that isn't built on a house of cards. Now, with this, with the debt-based systems that we're currently in, you know, largely mortgages in the U.S. and, you know, some of these other lending products, but that's the one that always comes to mind to people. Does housing essentially need to crash in order for us to get to a place where it's more of a cash-based system, or is it a slow, gradual?
So think through what's actually happening right now. If you're making an 8% return in the market, mm-hmm. and your hedge fund, and you made 15 or 20%, you were the top hedge fund last year. You lost money to Bitcoin. You lost money to people doing nothing, mm-hmm. just holding Bitcoin, and that will happen over and over again. So, but relative to all of the other billions of people on the planet that are getting negative returns, you look like a winner. Mm-hmm. So that's the repricing, and it just keeps on happening forever. If you believe that 5% return is good for you, and it means your cash is losing 40% a year.
At least then, right?
Yeah, at least that's what it means. So all of the people making that choice, not might be getting repriced, are getting repriced. And so their choice is actually showing up in the free market too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like that's where we're going to be heading here then. I mean, are we already in it?
We've been in it for 16 years. We've been in it since 15 years. We've been in it since Bitcoin started. And it's the awareness that we're in it is income on each person. And eventually, so if it, assuming it just keeps on going, assuming it stays decentralized and secure, it will keep repricing everything else. And there will be going to be a greater awareness of what we're talking about right now.
Now, what's it going to take then to bring that greater awareness, do you think?
What you're doing. What just I'm doing, just not more podcasts, more products, more people building in the space, more people spending their time on Noster, more people talking to other people. But it's a real, you said even what I'm talking about was hard for you. It's hard for you to understand, mm-hmm. right? So it's amazing. I did the same thing, and I want to be careful about it. So my own trying to describe this, right? The 10 years, and I didn't know about Bitcoin 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I bought Bitcoin for my first time in 2017. But even as I started to understand it, my knowledge deepened. And then my ability to probably communicate this, what's happening, deepened. But you pretend like you always knew once you know, right? Mm-hmm. You pretend that somebody else didn't influence you or a whole bunch of people didn't influence you. You always knew it was just you're smarter than everybody else. And it's not true.
Yeah.
Right. We all, that's the reflection of the world, right? We impact everybody around us from every single thing we do. And so if you probably know a lot of friends that still aren't in it, and it feels like, what don't you understand? And the more you essentially talk down to those people, the further they'll push back.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So because we all have to let go of these lies we were told in our own time and find this. But that's why it says it doesn't really matter, because it's imposing this discipline. The speed of the transition is the speed of people understanding.
Yeah, and it's the new system that we've never experienced before, and people understanding a world that we've never seen in history.
So how do you do that? How does Steve Jobs create something that never existed before?
Yeah,
I pinch myself. I get to do what I get to do now, from writing a book to try to explain. Something that I could see, and it was hellishly hard to write the book because I was trying to put together something I could hardly explain. Mm-hmm. And then by doing it more and more, you get better and better at it. How does the world change? It changes. Every single thing we see around us is from us.
Yeah.
Changes from us. So, and by the way, this is extraordinarily powerful for people who are trying to wait right now. Because all of the problems, all of the adoption of the 8 billion people moving to this, all of the problems in making Lightning better, making Fediment better, making Cashew better, making all of these things that are going to be the different pieces to bring more people on, are all like wide open opportunities to create more value. If in your local town you don't have a meetup, start a meetup. Mm-hmm. This is an open protocol. By starting a meetup, you'll learn this faster. You'll attract the people that are around this, and you'll see a whole bunch more of opportunities that you couldn't see before, because you weren't in the system. Just like you've done on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's just always like, I don't know. It seems like it's mind bending to talk to you about this stuff, Jeff, because I just always get like so deep into it. But you know, this new system is something that I think, you know, it's just going to be hard to imagine. And do you think that because Bitcoin is the only thing that has been truly verifiably scarce, that is the reason why this system cannot be almost imagined by the average person, or it's harder to grasp?
It's a number of things, but so when I think about it, it's these five interconnected principles or properties: open, decentralized, secure, protocol, bounded by energy. And so you could take any one of these, but if it was closed, then it wouldn't work. If it wasn't decentralized, it wouldn't work. If it wasn't secure, it wouldn't work. Protocol, I'd say the majority of people I run into today still measure Bitcoin as a technology instead of a protocol. And protocols are winner take all. There is no number two protocol. They're winner take all. You're either on the internet or off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in layers. And people misunderstand how they emerge because the first layer can't do what you want it to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so in that environment, when Bitcoin was just the first layer and it could only do it, the trade-off was 5 to 7 transactions a second, and you could only do 5 to 7 transactions a second, it would be easy to conflate Bitcoin and all these other things because most people would see it as a technology.
Mm-hmm.
And in technology, the new technology is winning. In a protocol, it doesn't look like that. Protocol comes in layers, and it gives more functionality in layers. So that would be a huge source of misunderstanding. And if you don't understand what I just said, I deeply understand, then you could easily get confused in all the crypto craze and the scams mm-hmm. and everything there. And then bounded by energy. First principle of life is energy. We're energy. We're short energy. We need more energy. And the Bitcoin by also kind of being bound by energy, it also creates energy abundance by bringing a free market source to chase abundant energy.
Yeah, and it seems like it, historically every single, I guess, society that's been able to prosper, it's been their ability to grasp more energy. And it seems like that's essentially what Bitcoin encourages then, right?
Energy, storage, and compute. All you are, all I am, all we are is a source of energy, storage, and compute, chasing ever higher forms of energy, storage, and compute. And every time we found any one of those, a big breakthrough, society's massively prospered. You could use energy going from fire to coal or coal to oil, because you have more energy against the other two, storage, taking our minds and putting them in books, massively increased storage capacity
mm-hmm.
of the human mind, and allowed more compute, all those minds reading those books, to be able to create new ideas. The same thing's happening on computers today. These step changes. So we are energy, storage, and compute. Ever searching for higher energy storage and compute.
Yeah, I like that. Well, last time I had you on, Jeff, we had your guitars in the background. So I asked you a little bit about that. But now we're meeting in person. I don't know if we've actually met in person, maybe briefly. Yeah, I think in Madeira. Met briefly. Yeah, yeah. But I want to ask you, because you're going to all these conferences all over the place, you're traveling the world. Where's your favorite place that you've been so far? In the world.
Oh, I can't. There is not. I can't answer that. I didn't answer you very well on the guitar question, and I can't answer you very well on the on this. I think I've been to 85 countries or something.
Wow. Okay. Something else.
And it's almost like in this process, there's something brilliant in all these areas. There's something so cool, like in Medellin. What a cool city.
Oh my God, it's great.
But. It's different, totally different than Madeira, and I love Madeira. Or it's different than Nepal, and I love Nepal or India or so. So, if I go into what drives you to a certain city, if I really go, most of the things that drive you to are the experiences you had there with people, with what it felt like there. So some stand out more than others just because of that, but. It's hard to pick a spot that's better, that's like the one.
So are you looking forward to doing anything specific here while you're in Medellin? Are you doing have anything like excursions or anything like
are
that?
Are you going to do the one on Sunday?
To Guadalupe?
Guadalupe, yeah.
No, I'm not. At least I don't have that planned yet. Maybe. Yeah, I haven't signed up for it yet, but I hear Guadalupe is gorgeous.
Yeah, I think I'm going to.
Okay, yeah. Great. The other thing I did while I was here, I don't know if you're this adventurous, but I went paragliding the other day.
Oh, wow.
And it was absolutely amazing because like Medellin, it has all the hills and everything. And so we went up 300 meters and back down, and
cool.
It was a ton of fun. Yeah. So I recommend that. Anything in particular you're looking to try, like food wise or anything like that here?
Just got in last night. So okay. Don't know. Yeah.
All right, all right. And then you had your first Colombian coffee here, maybe?
I did.
Maybe.
I right. so, have so, to do that.
Yeah.
Well, we just did now.
Yeah, exactly. So how did you, how would you rate this?
That's a 10 out of 10.
Okay, yeah, 10 out of 10. And we're going to pay with Bitcoin too, so it's even better.
And we got a Bitcoin chocolate.
Yeah, right? There you go. The Bitcoin chocolate there for you too. So anything else that you think is going to be, I guess, that you're looking forward to while you're here in Medellin, or maybe something else down this year?
This is such an exciting spot, and I pinch myself that I get to do it, right? With all of the people in this space. That's what's so exciting. Like my family travels with me and, most of the time it's wild to be able to get to do this. We live in the most interesting time, and to be able to be doing what we're doing right now, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, I mean, like majority of the time I live in Florida, and I believe you're Canadian, correct?
Yeah.
So, and we've met in Colombia and Madeira, yeah. all these different places, not even close to relative, we're not too far away from each other, and we're meeting halfway across the world, it seems. So it's absolutely amazing what Bitcoin and all this has brought. So is there any one unique experience that really stands out to you? I know that, when you got on stage in Madeira, you teared up a little bit, man. You got a little emotional. And I think that, from just my perspective, just getting to know you over these years, it seems like you're just, a great spokesperson for the Bitcoin space. And, you really put your heart and soul into a lot of these things to try to educate people. So is there anything that you really stands out to you?
So I'd say that's why I got emotional in that. And because when you actually understand Bitcoin is us, and you look out at a whole bunch of people that are also Bitcoin and where the world's going on that, it is so powerful. It's hard to describe. It's you see abundance and beauty and love everywhere. That's literally where we're going in this space. And I have a hard time, even now I get a little bit like that because you don't see yourself better, worse, anything else. You are a node in the network. You are a node in the network in a free market that by trading with each other, every single person is contributing to everyone else. You are part of a network like that. And that's a big, big deal. It's a really big deal because we've never lived in that world before. So if you can see that, if you can really see that, I can see that, mm-hmm. I can feel it. It's the energy I get back from this, from everybody in this ecosystem. It's like a mirror reflecting back, and I can totally see. I can see where we're going, and I know why we're going there because mm-hmm. it is us. Right. That's what it should look like. That's what it should have looked like all along anyways. Mm-hmm. And we were co-opted by a system that co-opted us, and we can't see the truth in what we actually can provide until we move to this new system. So it makes me emotional because it's so deeply profound. It's so deeply powerful. And I see every other Bitcoiner I meet through that same lens.
100%. And yeah, you're just a great spokesperson for the space, and I'm honored to get to know you, Jeff. So why don't you tell everybody else where they can find out more about you and all the stuff you got going on.
Jeffbooth.ca is my website, but I'm on Noster. If you're an entrepreneur building in the space and you're looking for capital, Ego Death Capital.
Yeah, and I'll put all that in the show notes. Jeff, thanks so much, man, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here, and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.